all aboard. We've been discussing Canto 10, Chapter 11, sequentially, and the chapter covers Krishna's childhood pastimes. It starts in Gokul, where Krishna lived for 3 years, 4 months. The elders got together, headed by Upananda, as Nanda Maharaja's elder brother, and they considered too many disturbances here, demons coming, and we should consider going to a place that's safer, better for the children, better for the cows, and so forth, and they decide to shift from the eastern bank of the river Jamuna in Gokul to the western side of the river Jamuna in the Vrindavan forest. So there's this whole description of that discussion and their movements, and Krishna and Balaram, 3 years, 4 months old, they're really happy to be in Vrindavan. Specifically mentioned are three things. Govardhan Hill is in that section where they moved to. And the river bank of the river Jamuna, so that's quite a distance. The tract of land was 2 yojanas by 1 yojana, or 16 miles by 8 miles. That's in the uninhabited forest. They just set up thorn bush fences and then eventually built houses, and they staked out their place. And then Krishna started growing from 3 years, 4 months, and he was attracted, like anything, he and Balaram, to playing with the other cowherd boys in the Vrindavan forest, and especially they liked being with the cows. Nanda Maharaj has 900,000 cows, a lot of cows. And so he would, little boys, they would go with their father to take care of the cows. And Krishna became very enthusiastic. He wanted to be given the privilege of taking care of cows. And it was decided, you're too little, 3-year-old. You can spend time with the calves. So he became the herding of the calves. This is chapter 11. And, you know, this thing, that thing. When the boys went herding the calves, they were just playing. The calves followed along. And they were playing because they were attached to Krishna. And that there's this very elaborate description of the playful activities. It comes again in the next chapter. Because it's a trans, although he's the personality of Godhead, he, Krishna, enjoys exchanges of love according to different rasas or mellows. And amongst the cowherd boys, there are different categories of cowherd boys, but they're largely of the same age. And it's all about loving exchange. Loving exchange with the boys. So that's discussed for some time. And then Kamsa, Mathura is south of the Vrindavan forest, south by several miles south of Vrindavan forest. So Kamsa's in Mathura worried about Krishna. So he sends demons from time to time. And one of the demons that's mentioned in this chapter 11 is Vatsasura, a demon that took the shape of a calf, because they had shape-changing powers, mystic power. And Krishna understood, this isn't a calf, this is a demon. He was very clever. He made the sounds of the calves, he would call them that way. They would come stretching out their necks, and he would scratch underneath their chin, because cows like that. So the cows would, one by one, and the Vatsasura figured, now's my chance, I can get Krishna this way. So he went moo, and Krishna went right behind him, took him by the hind legs, and whirled him around fast. So when his life air was slipping, the calf body changed back to his normal humongous demon body. So here's this little 3-year-old boy whirling around a giant demon. He threw him up in a tree, a kapita tree that has nice kapita fruits, because Krishna was thinking the boys can then play with the kapita fruits. They play ball. And then the boys went, wow, that was really good. Let's have lunch. So they had lunch. And then later, Kamsa came to know, Vatsasura was killed. What to do? And his minister advised, you have a very powerful, nearly invincible person at your beck and call. His name is Baka. Baka means crane. So Bakasura lived near Nandagram. So where Nandagram is about 20 miles north of where the southern border of Braja, the Vrindavan forest, is, and northwest. So one day, the cowherd boys, Krishna and the boys, were taking the calves far away, because they were getting like a little used to and enjoying the freedom of little boys going together. So they went all the way to this Nandishwar, or Nandagram, what it's called today, and they saw something very unusual. And it looked like the top of a mountain peak that had just kind of crashed by being hit by a thunderbolt, and just sitting there near the lake. And so the cowherd boys started wondering, what's that? We never saw that before. And it looked like a mountain. It looks like a big animal. And so they were curious, but Krishna knew, because he's omniscient. So he went to explore, hey, what's that? So it was Bakasura, and Bakasura was very, very large. And as soon as Krishna got close, he immediately opened his big, big beak and put Krishna inside his beak and closed his beak. But he couldn't swallow Krishna. Krishna has mystic powers. He made his body big, so he couldn't swallow him. And he also made his body very hot. And it burned the mouth of Bakasura, so he spit him out and then went with his beak to try to just bite him. And that's where we are. That's where we're reading from Canto 10, Chapter 11. And we're reading commentaries by different acharyas. This one is Jiva Goswami and his Priti Sandarbha. It's a long story, but in Vrindavan there were 6 very, very exalted, elevated, perfected souls that were followers of Lord Chaitanya. They wrote volumes of books. One of the authors, this Jiva Goswami, he wrote 3 different commentaries on Srimad Bhagavatam, 18,000 verses commentary. One of those is subject by subject in categories. And the final of those categories is Priti Sandarbha. Priti, affection, love. So this is from that book. And he's describing how the cowherd boys see Krishna as their life. So here's the reference. It's from the verse that we're reading. When Balaram and the other boys saw that Krishna had been devoured by their gigantic crane, they fainted, becoming lifeless like senses without prana. This is one of the verses from this 11th chapter. Now, the commentary says, Balaram, he's Krishna's counterpart. He's omniscient like Krishna's omniscient. And he's all powerful like Krishna's powerful. But the affection that Balaram has for Krishna is so great that when he sees Krishna in difficulty, he forgets what he knows. And his feelings of sweetness and intimacy of love for Krishna eclipses what he knows. The sweetness of the residents of Braja is so strong. That's the topic. Krishna is their life. There's another example at the end of this same chapter 11, canto 10. Just as the senses become active in the presence of prana, when Krishna was freed from this danger, being in Bhaka's beak, all the boys, including Balaram, thought that their life had been restored. In bliss, they embraced Krishna when he approached them, and then they collected their own calves and returned to Braja, where they declared the incident loudly. Yay, Krishna did it again. But when Krishna was in danger, they forgot, because Krishna is their life. Here's another series from, again, Preeti Sandarbha, and is explaining a similar point. How spiritual love overwhelmed even Lord Balaram's awareness of Lord Krishna's power and opulence is seen in these words of Srimad Bhagavatam. This is Canto 10, Chapter 53, where Krishna is going to kidnap Rukmini. Rukmini was going to be married to Shishupal. No way, I'm not going to marry Shishupal. But that was her brother's wish, Rukmi. And her father really didn't like that either, Bhishmaka. But he was kind of just going along with his elder son. And so she wrote a letter. Dear Krishna, come kidnap me. I've given my heart to you. There's no way I'm going to marry this person. And here's how you can do it. And gave a whole plan. She's very clever. Sent a brahmana. The brahmana came back with a message. I'm coming. Balaram came to know. Krishna is planning to go and kidnap Rukmini. So when Balaram heard that, he's in Dwarka. When Lord Balaram heard about these preparations of the inimical kings and how Lord Krishna had set off alone to steal the bride, he feared that a fight would ensue. Immersed in affection for his brother, he hurried to Kundina, that's Bhishmaka's capital, with a mighty army consisting of infantry and soldiers riding on elephants, horses, and chariots. Now previously, 20-something times, single-handedly, Krishna defeated the entire army of Jarasandha. Balaram is omniscient. He knows that Krishna is all-powerful. Still, the point is, his feelings of affection for Krishna are so great, he forgets his majesty and forgets his mightiness and his Aishwarya and becomes moved by that intimacy of his love. Another example of devotees being overwhelmed by love for Lord Krishna is seen in these words in Srimad Bhagavatam, the same text 49. That's when Balaram and the other boys saw that Krishna had been devoured by the gigantic crane, they became almost unconscious, like senses without life. Paragraph. The bliss the cowherd people attain by perceiving Lord Krishna's sweetness far surpasses the bliss that comes from perceiving Brahman or perceiving the opulence and power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even Shukadeva Goswami, seeing the good fortune attained by the cowherd people, became filled with wonder. He said in Srimad Bhagavatam, the next chapter, chapter 12, is a famous verse, I'm going to recite it, because I've heard Prabhupada speak it so many times, it resonates. So this may be the first time you're hearing the verse, but it's a very special verse. Etam satam brahma sukhanubhutya dasyam gatanam paradaivatena mayashritanam naradarakena sakam vrajuhu krita punya punja. And Prabhupada would repeat this phrase, krita punya punja, krita punya punja, indicating that the cowherd boys, krita punya punja, who can say how many lifetimes of piety they've undergone to achieve this good fortune, that they're playing with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So here's the verse. In this way, Sukadev speaking, all the cowherd boys used to play with Krishna, who is the source of the Brahman effulgence for the Gyanis, desiring to merge into that effulgence, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead for devotees who accepted Dasya Bhakti, eternal servitorship, and who, for ordinary persons, is but an ordinary child. The cowherd boys, however, having accumulated the results of pious activities from many lives, were able to associate in this way with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How can one explain their great fortune? Then here's another reference from this same passage, and then we're going to go on to the next verse. This is Rupa Goswami, another one of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. He received teachings from Lord Chaitanya directly on the science of bhakti, and he wrote a book under his order to do so called Bhakti Rasa Amrita Sindhu. It's a Sindhu, an ocean of Bhakti Rasa, and it's nectar. So that's the title of the book. And here's one section. He's speaking of Krishna's friends in Braja. The friends in Braja suffer from not seeing Krishna even for a moment. They play with him at all times, and their very life depends on Krishna. For this reason, they are considered the chief among all the friends. Meaning like Arjuna has a relationship with Krishna, friendship. Bhaktosi me sakha cheti, from Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says to Arjuna, you'll understand what I'm saying because you're my devotee and my dear friend. So Arjuna is a friend, but amongst all the friends, those in Braja are chief. And here's a commentary. The following Bhagavatam verse illustrates their love. This is spoken by Brahma a few chapters later, after stealing the calves and cowherd boys and putting them in a cave, coming back to see what's Krishna going to do. And he sees the calves and the cowherd boys having lunch with Krishna. He's bewildered. So he goes back to the cave, and they're in the cave. He comes back and they're having lunch with Krishna. And then Krishna shows for each one of the calves and cowherd boys a form of Narayan. Simultaneously, the boys and Narayan, that many. And surrounding them are the demigods and the personified Vedas and the potencies, the Shaktis personified, all singing and praises of Lord Narayan in a big concert. And then they all disappear. Poof. So Brahma offers prayers, and this is one of those prayers. The cowherd boyfriends said to Lord Krishna, you have returned so quickly. We have not eaten even one morsel in your absence. Please come here and take your meal without distraction. What it was the beginning of the pastime was when Brahma stole the calves and cowherd boys. First he stole the calves, and so Krishna said, "You finish your lunch, I'll go find the calves." And a whole year passed on earthly time, because it was some activities took place on Brahma's time, and the equivalent of 1 year passed on earth. So the boys that had been in the cave were brought by Krishna back to the place where they were sitting, and they felt by Yogamaya's influence, no time had passed. Not even a moment has passed. You went to get the calves and you're so attached to us, sit down and let's have lunch. And then this verse, text 49, when Balaram and the other boys saw that Lord Krishna had been devoured by the giant crane, they became almost unconscious, their senses without life. So now we're going on to the next verse. Text 50. Krishna, who was the father of Lord Brahma, but who was acting as the son of a cowherd man, became like fire burning the root of the demon's throat, and the demon Bakasura immediately disgorged him. He spit him out. When the demon saw that Krishna, although having been swallowed, was unharmed, he immediately attacked Krishna again with his sharp beak. And here's Prabhupada's purport. He writes, although Krishna is always as soft as a lotus, within the throat of Bakasura, he created a burning sensation of being hotter than fire. Although Krishna's whole body is sweeter than sugar candy, Bakasura tasted bitterness and therefore immediately vomited Krishna up. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 4:11, yayatamam prapadyante tangstataiva pajamyaham. When Krishna is accepted as an enemy, he becomes the most intolerable object for the non-devotee who cannot tolerate Krishna within or without. Here this is shown by the example of Bakasura. Again, this is Jiva Goswami making his commentary. And it's kind of repeating some of the same points. Krishna became hot in the demon's palate when Baka took him in his mouth but could not swallow him. Krishna became stuck there in his mouth since Krishna wanted some fun in fighting with him. Though Krishna was the son of Nanda, he was also the father of Brahma in one of his expansions. That's Garbhadakshay Vishnu was the father of Brahma. For great fun, Krishna allowed himself to be swallowed by Baka. But because of Krishna's great power, Baka could not completely swallow him. In great anger, Baka then tried to kill Krishna, since Krishna was still unharmed. He tried to kill Krishna, who could not even be injured when he tried to do so. Because he was so angry, Baka lost his power of discrimination. Completely. If he can become so hot like fire in his mouth, how is he going to damage him? Sanatan Goswami, another one of those six residents of Vrindavan, writes, Krishna became hot in the demon's palate when Baka took him out of his mouth but could not swallow him. Krishna became stuck there in his mouth since Krishna wanted some fun in fighting with him. Paragraph. He became intensely hot. Though he was also the father of Brahma in one of his expansions, he was the son of Nanda. Krishna performed this most astonishing, inconceivable pastime, which was completely natural for him as the Supreme Lord and completely contrary to him as Nanda's son. paragraph. For great fun, now remember, he's just a few years old. For great fun, Krishna allowed himself to be swallowed by Baka, but because of Krishna's great power, Baka could not completely swallow him. By showing his unique childhood play and his special powers, he showed his special nature as Bhagavan. In great anger, Baka then tried to kill Krishna since Krishna was still unharmed. And one more commentary and we're finished for this evening. Just as sugar candy tastes bitter to the tongue of the diseased person, the demon Bakasura felt that his throat was on fire, although Krishna is as soft as a tender blue lotus. This indicates that Krishna's body became as hard as a thunderbolt. It was the fault of the demon's throat, not Krishna. When Baka spit out Krishna, he saw that Krishna was unharmed. To be continued tomorrow. So something that we've been understanding, particularly from our Acharya's commentaries. Wait a minute. Yeah. Is well, several things. The in different ways, Krishna would display his divinity. And the residents in Vrindavan have so much intensity of feelings of love as a servant or as a friend or as a parent or the conjugal lovers of Krishna, these four primary rasas, that they just somehow process Krishna's divinity as something else because their love is so strong. They don't love him because he's strong, but because he has powers. They love him because they love him. And it's very, very special, unique. And one of the teachings of rasa from our acharyas is there's five primary rasas and seven secondary rasas, makes 12. And the secondary rasas have a function. The secondary rasas have a function of increasing, spiking the primary rasa. So one of those secondary rasas is astonishment. So sometimes it's just Krishna is playing like a little boy, and sometimes Krishna shows his divinity. And when he shows his divinity, because they're accustomed to seeing him as their dear friend, the divinity doesn't fit. So they become astonished. And then the curtain closes and the sweetness comes back again. So the showing the power to kill Bakasura the way that he did, they're going to hear it shortly. When it comes with this, Bakasura and Agasura, that's their brothers. They had a sister, and their sister is Putana. And Putana was the first demon that Krishna killed, the first demon that was sent by Kamsa to kill Krishna. And although she came only in a disguise, as if she was a nice nurse to feed Krishna, she came in the mood or the function, rather, of a mother. Krishna gave her liberation. She came to kill him, but because she came with that, at least, ploy of being a mother to feed him, He accepted the motherly service and liberated her, gave her a position in the spiritual world as an assistant to Mother Jasoda in Goloka Vrindavan. It's described like that. And so Brahma is astonished. What's the extent of the mercy, karuna, the compassion of Krishna? Here's a demon. She came to kill him with a little idea that just a disguise as a mother, and Krishna gave her liberation. And he also gave liberation to her two brothers. Later, Bakasura and Agasura. The Agasura comes in chapter 13, this is chapter 11. And he gave them liberation, all three of them. They gave them because of Putana. She came to do some service. The other two just came to kill him. But because of their family relation with Putana, she came to do some service. They got liberation. And liberation is not easy to achieve. Great sages and ascetics and lifetimes. So how merciful is Krishna? And Brahma says, how are you going to repay the residents of Vrindavan? If you're going to do this for Putana and her two brothers, then what are you going to do for the residents of Vrindavan? How are you going to repay them? They give everything. Their wealth, their homes, their life, their families, their hearts, their possessions, everything, themselves, completely dedicated. How are you going to repay them? He gives himself. That's how he does it. And he is everything to them. That's how he does it. So when Bakasura comes, it's described by our acharyas. Krishna very kindly comes in direct contact with the mouth of Baka and the mouth of Agasura. Agasura is the big serpent. Krishna enters in his mouth. So what happens when there's contact with Krishna? His two lotus feet are touching the mouth of Bakasura and Agasura. They get purified by the touch of Krishna's lotus feet. So it looks like they're coming to kill him, but Krishna is liberating them and elevating them and purifying them because that's his nature. He's very kind. And the cowherd boys, they're so attached to Krishna, they faint when they see him in the beak of Bakasura. But he gets free and then he kills him. They go, yay, let's go back and tell everybody back in Braja. You know what Krishna did today? We heard an additional point with these Braja pastimes. According to Bhagavad Gita, there are three primary reasons why the personality of Godhead appears in this world. Pritranaya sadhunam, to give protection to the sadhus or deliver them. Vinashaya to duskritam, to admonish or quell the influence of the duskritis. And dharma sangstha. Panartaya, to reestablish principles of Dharma. So it was just, the commentary says, it was just routine business for Krishna to kill demons. That's incidental. For him, the main thing was his pastimes. So he was just, it was very dangerous. These are, you know, life-threatening situations, at least two, and more commonly three times a day. The principal ones are described, but every day, some great calamity would come. So when the calamity would come, the boys would go, ah, Krishna! And Krishna would rescue them. But when Krishna's in the mouth of Bakasura, or when Krishna's in the coils of the Kaliya serpent, their protector is in danger. They faint. They are prepared to give up their lives. Because it's not just like a loved one in this world when a loved one's in danger. This is on the platform of prema. pure ecstatic love for the Supreme Person in different rasas. So we're getting a picture of pure love, the highest form of pure love. Because, we'll just say one other thing. beyond this cosmic manifestation, that each universe has 14 planetary systems in it from upper to lower. And then there's shells, 7 layers covering each universe. And then beyond, on the other side of each universe, is the causal ocean. When Vamana poked his foot through the covering of the universe, the water of the causal ocean came in and descended as the form of the Ganges. So on the other shore of the causal ocean is the vastness of the spiritual sky, the Brahma Jyoti. And within that Brahma Jyoti, there's unlimited spiritual planets called Vaikuntha planets. The topmost of those Vaikuntha planets is Ayodhya, the abode of Lord Ramachandra. And within that vastness of the spiritual sky, there's one largest and lotus-shaped spiritual planet called Krishna Loka or Goloka. And from time to time, Krishna descends and performs his pastimes. But this abode of Goloka not only has the opulence of Vaikuntha, but more than the opulence of Vaikuntha, it has an intimacy of love that keeps growing and growing and growing. Dwarka, Mathura, Vrindavan. Greater and greater and greater intimacy of love. That's the special feature, according to the Bhagavatam. That's the special feature of Vrindavan. Intensity of love that eclipses the majesty or Aishwarya feature of Bhagavan. We have this teaching from Vishnu Purana that says the meaning of Bhagavan, this is Parashramuni says, Bhagavan is one who has all opulences in full. Shad Aishvarya Purna, 6 opulences, all strength, all knowledge, all renunciation, all fame, all beauty, and all renunciation. All opulences in full, that's Bhagavan. And Bhagavan resides in Vaikuntha. He has all opulences in full. Bhagavan, Narayana. And then there's the upper portion of Vaikuntha is Ayodhya, where there's not only opulence, but there's sweetness, like Narayan doesn't have a mother and father. But Ram has a mother and father. There's a sweetness in Ayodhya that just isn't found in Vaikuntha. Or he has 3 brothers. Narayan doesn't have brothers. And so forth. There's intimacy in loving dealings in Ram's Leela. Therefore, they're very celebrated. Very celebrated. We're at somebody's home last night and our host says since so many years, every evening for like the past some number of years, he's been reading a verse from Ramcharitmanas every day. He does his morning prayers. Just one verse. He reads the Sanskrit and the translation of the Sanskrit every day, every day, every day. Anyway, so it's celebrated literature. Ramayana, the pastimes of Lord Ram, as he appears in this world, but it's eternally going on in Ayodhya. There's a sweetness there. And then even sweeter still, in Dwaraka, there's not only Sita and Ram, there's 16,108 queens with 16,108 palaces, with 16,108 expansions of Krishna, with 10 sons with each wife, that each then have 10 sons. He has a big family. And it, you know, and it's all of an intimacy in Dwarka with majesty, but with intimacy. And then in Mathura, even more intimacy, and in Vrindavan, superlative intimacy. So that's the picture of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where we've been reading these pastimes of Krishna, from the time of his birth, being born in Mathura, then being transferred that very evening of his birth to Gokula, and now he's here in Vrindavan. And he's showing the sweetness, while at the same time, from time to time, he exhibits his divinity or his opulence. And the boys go, "Wow, that was really good." let's go play. Let's go take care of the calves. They're immersed in, so the killing of demons is just incidental. The main is the exchange of love. And meanwhile, Krishna's eliminating demoniac persons from the surface of the earth, which is what was requested. Mother Earth in the form of a cow went to Brahma. Brahma and the demigods went to the shore of the milk ocean and they offered their prayers. Krishna said he'll come to relieve the burden of earth. Vinashaya Chaduskritam. So he's doing. But the main business is the loving exchange. So how he does, it's quite thrilling, very creative. and the powers of the personality of Godhead are being exhibited. Very attractive. The meaning of the name Krishna means the all-attractive. Krish means to attract. And Na indicates the form of bliss, Ananda. Krishna. He's all-attractive. And the Pritanaya Sadhana Vinashaya Chaduskritam Dharma Sangsthapanartaya. Later he'll give his Bhagavad Gita and then conclude his pastimes. But the Vrindavan pastimes are very celebrated. He spent only 11 years in Vrindavan and he was on the planet for 125 years. But the Vrindavan Leela is so celebrated, although it was just short. But very, very, very sweet, very attractive, very amazing. And commentaries are abundant to explain them. Like in Ram's Leela, we hear very little about there's the Balakanda, but we don't hear so much about his childhood activities. When he's called by, Vishwamitra Muni. My mind went blank. He was married when he was 12. When Dasarath says, please don't take him, he's not even 16. There's details that come out later in the Ramayana. He's only 12. When Sita is asked by Ravan, who are you? And she gives her description. I'm the daughter of Janak. And Ram married me when he was 12. She was a little girl. She was less than 12. But anyway, we don't hear so much about Ram's childhood pastimes. But Krishna's childhood pastimes are so celebrated. And he wasn't even 12. When Akura takes him to Mathura, he was 11 years, 8 months, according to the description. But so much packed into his childhood pastimes. The attractiveness is the loving exchange. The incidental is the killing of the demons. But it's very interesting how he does it. Each one a little different. But he's giving mercy. They become liberated. Very special. So what we've been doing when we have these little evening gatherings is the people in the room have, we request you have not only an opportunity, but please stimulate some discussion here. And then it gives time for the people that are viewing this remotely. They can send in their text message and we can read them out. So any discussion from those who are here?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. How do I understand Krishna and our soul is eternal and has no beginning and end?
How do you understand that Krishna and your soul are eternal and have no beginning and end? That's your question. Interesting question. Well, time is eternal. And there's the reflection of time which says past, present, future. That's time as we know it. Time is an energy, Kala Shakti. And time as we know it destroys things. It moves, time as we know it, it moves matter. Just like, you know, the roofing and the siding. After 20 years, they come along and so, because anything that comes into being, time will destroy it. Anything. Not most things. Anything that's created is destroyed. And the destroying force is time. It's not just the construction workers or the wind and the elements. It's the time energy destroys. That's past, present, future time. But past, present, future time is but a reflection of eternal time. You know, chapter 15, Bhagavad Gita. There's the tree, and there's the reflection of the tree in a body of water, pond or lake. So what we see is the reflection, and it's a reflection of something. So time as we know it is the past, present, and future kind of time. And that's a reflection of eternal time. There's no destruction for even a fraction of a moment. It's in Brahma Samhita described like that. Eternal. Not only the soul and Krishna, the abode of Krishna, everything is eternal. Everything. There's not something that's temporary. Everything is eternal. So that's who we are and that's who Krishna is. We have an eternal relation with the Supreme Eternal. And as Krishna says, chapter 2, Bhagavad Gita, the soul doesn't come into being, never in the past, never in the future, not the present. So where time doesn't act, that's what the soul is. The soul is covered by something that's influenced by time. The gross and the subtle bodies come into being. And after some time, they dissolve. Even the subtle body dissolves. So it's two pictures. And we're only accustomed to seeing one because we're covered by that one. We don't see or relate to or identify ourselves with the tree that this is a reflection of. And spiritual consciousness means to become in touch with that which is eternal or transcendental or fully spiritual. The reflection is of the spiritual, but its basis and support is the spiritual. And the soul is spiritual. Krishna is all spiritual. He doesn't have a material form. He has form, but not a material form. Interesting question. Time. Time is the key. So anything else? You usually have something. I'm looking. Pratibahu, anything?
Uh, So when we understand the different rasas in Vaikuntha versus Ayodhya Dham versus the Vrindavan Dham. So my understanding is, and this is to confirm, that the Sakya and Dasya Ras also exist in the Ayodhya Dham and Vrindavan Dham, but they are, there's more sweetness.
Yes, correct.
Involved in this.
Correct, correct.
Similarly, does the Vatsalya and Madhurya Ras also exist in,
yes,
Vaikuntha and in...
Well, not in Vaikuntha. Who's the parent of Narayan? But in Ayodhya, yes.
Like in Dwapar Yuga, it was said that the people have a lifespan of 1,000 years. So Krishna lived for about 125 years. Even the Pandavas, somewhere close to 100 years. So how to...
Here's how. As the age passes, lifespan diminishes. This is Kali Yuga, lifespan maximum. But as the Kali Yuga progresses, it diminishes. So Krishna appeared towards the end of Dwapara Yuga, where lifespan, it was diminishing. So closer to the Kali Yuga maximum lifespan of 100 years. There's a similar comparison with Ram. That's where you were going to go? No? But Dasarath lived for a long time. So the appearance of Ramachandra came, and his father's rule came at the very early stages of Treta Yuga. I was trying to find the answer to this question. I couldn't find the answer. So it may have been that he ruled even towards the end of the previous yuga, or that Ravan lived towards the end of the previous yuga, because his lifespan was really long, even longer than Dasarath's, because a predecessor king in the line of Dasarath cursed Ravan that he would die through someone in his disciplic line. Or, you know, the line of the kings. So, Ravana lived for more than one yuga. That's for sure.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay. Yeah. At least the overlapping of, I should say, the overlapping of the beginning of the end of Satya and the beginning of Treta Yuga. Go ahead.
The cowherd boys, Maharaj, we hear that they had done lot of punya, like in their previous lives, to have this association of
Well,
Krishna.
Shukadeva Goswami speaks like that.
Okay. But are they also eternal?
Yes. So there's, for those persons who take part in Krishna's pastimes, they're from different groups. Some are the eternal associates of Krishna. And the second group is those who have become perfect and they're being trained up by the perfect. But the statement is not, you know, it's, you don't, back to your question about, you know, eternal or the time. you don't become eternal. The soul is eternal. Doesn't become eternal. So the eternally perfect cowherd boys don't have to do something to become eternally perfect cowherd boys. They're eternally cowherd boys. But it's some had joined their ranks. So it wasn't, one doesn't become except for the perfected souls that then get trained by the eternal servants of. It's his ecstatic jubilation. Shukadeva Goswami speaks that verse. He's saying they're so fortunate. What might they have done to get that fortune? Krita punya. Punja. How about in the back there? Any comments or questions? You pass? You're okay. Okay. Okay.
So I'm not sure if how true is this, but how was the last years of Sri Krishna in Dwarka, the later stage of his life?
What's your question?
So
did he look old? Is that what your question is?
No, not the
physical appearance.
Physical appearance, but like I've heard somewhere that the families, they were having a lot of issues and all that stuff. So
the families didn't have issues. Like the families didn't have issues. The scene, I'm not sure what you're asking. There was arranged after Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan.
Yeah. No, the time when he's meant in Dwarka, specifically.
But he wound up his pastimes in Vrindavan after killing Shishupal and Dhenukasura. He returned to Vrindavan for 2 months. He arranged for the eternal associates to go back to Krishna Loka and to remain present in their unmanifest forms. And then Krishna went to Dwarka to finish up his pastimes in Dwarka. And he had a plan. So the issues didn't exist until Krishna's plan. And the plan was Samba, one of his sons, they were having the brahmanas were having a festival on behalf of Vasudev, Krishna's father. Vasudev wanted to have a big festival, so the brahmanas participated in a yajna. And after the yajna, the brahmanas went to some place. Samba, they paid a joke on the brahmanas. You know the story, right?
I have just got some dots. I haven't connected those.
He dressed up like a woman. He's Krishna's son, Samba, and with his the sari over his head, and the other boys said that she's really shy. She would like to know whether the child will be a boy or a girl. It was a lump of iron underneath his sari. And the brahmanas, they were qualified brahmanas. They knew they were just being made fun of. So they pronounced to the boys, that child will be the destruction of the entire Yadu dynasty. So the boys got very afraid. They went back and told Ugrasena. Ugrasena said, let's have that lump of iron. And he ground the lump of iron into little fine powder. And the powder was thrown into the sea. The powder drifted to the shore of Prabhas. And it grew as reeds that were iron-like. You know that story, right?
I don't know.
But this was disturbance.
Okay.
That was the disturbance. Okay. So they went to Prabhas as a holy place. They went to Prabhas, and by Krishna's arrangement, they were enjoying a beverage that they overindulged in and became intoxicated, and one insulted another, and they destroyed each other. It was Krishna's arrangement so that they could go back to the eternal abode in Krishna Loka, Because who could do that? Yeah. They were his infallible associates. They did it to themselves by Krishna's arrangement. But then that left him and Balaram and a few others. He told his, the detail is there in the Bhagavatam, but he told his chariot driver, Daruka, to go back to Dwarka and inform them, very soon, Dwarka is going to sink. There's some people that were still in Dwarka and his queens. So arrange for them to come to the, from the island in the middle of the sea, not the middle of the sea, but out in the sea, to come because it's going to sink. Dwarka is going to be gone, unmanifest. So that was, the disturbance was Krishna's arranging for all the associates in Dwarka to return to the spiritual abode. Okay. And then Balaram had his departure pastime, Krishna had his departure pastime, and the pastimes were over. So the disturbance in Dwarka was that only, because otherwise there was very rarely disturbance because of Krishna's presence. The Shyamataka jewel created some problems. You know that story.
But
not a place of trouble. It's a place of tranquility.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, she has something.
I'm trying to do chanting consciously, but sometimes I can't control my mind. So am I doing unconsciously or?
You're a normal, like all the rest of us, individual. You're speaking about your distracted mind when chanting, right? Par for the course. Standard. So what to do? It's not abnormal. It's according to Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna says to Krishna, Chanchala hi mana, Krishna, Balavad, very flickering and very strong and very difficult to control the mind. So that's Arjuna, what to speak of the rest of us. And then Krishna responds and says, yes, but here's how to control the mind. He gives two things. Constant practice and detachment. And detachment means attachment to that which is eternal, or attachment to sat leads to detachment from asat. And the mind is certainly asat. Very temporary. This and then that. Okay. So, now what to do, there's the why. Because the mind is absorbed in the temporary, and when you're chanting, there's nothing about chanting that's attracting the mind that wants some material object to connect with and be the enjoyer of. The mind is serving the senses who want sense objects to enjoy, and there's not a sense object enjoyment experience. It's a spiritual experience. So the mind is restless. It goes here and goes there and goes there. Anything but the one thing. It's the nature of a mind that's been conditioned for who knows how many lifetimes to be absorbed in the temporary. And this is a program to bring the mind and the conscious self to the position of eternal. That's yoga. This is bhakti yoga through mantra yoga. And it takes practice. Constant practice, or at least extended practice. Until little by little by little we practice. I mean, let's just say, exercise. Some people are good about doing exercise. Some people aren't so good about doing exercise. But those people that do exercise, when they do it, it's just, you do a little bit and you're tired. But you do a little bit, 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 you develop a stamina, and then you can do a little more. And it takes practice to be able to do a little more and not collapse or just like crash out. So it's incremental steps in the direction of practice. And when the mind that's unbridled, that's a phrase that's used in Bhagavad Gita, the unbridled mind is our greatest enemy. And the mind that's bridled, you know, that's like a horse that has a bit in his mouth and the reins, that's bridled. And then you can control the horse. And the horse is very powerful, or an oxen or something. And by that bridling, then the mind can be your best friend. But if uncontrolled mind is the greatest enemy, it can take you who knows where. And supposing you get angry, or supposing you get whatever, and you just get dragged all over creation by the mind, if it's unbridled. So even for material things, there has to be some discipline of the mind. Same principle for spiritual things. But for material things, there's the material incentive. If I do this, I get that. Mode of passion. I do this because I get that. So a child doesn't play as much as they'd like to play because they have to study. So anyway, the material principle works also in its perfect form in the spiritual plane. Practice. You live your life, and part of your life is you want to spiritualize your life. So you do that which is most effective to spiritualize your life. According to scripture, the chanting is the most effective in this age. There isn't something that even comes close to spiritualize your life. So a little bit. And you practice. And the mind's all over the place, and you just keep practicing. You can purify the mind, purify the senses, purify consciousness, elevate your understanding so that, just like your husband's question about the soul, that's who I am. I'm this eternal spark, not the body. But, you know, I have one, but it's not me. But we think it's me because in material consciousness. In spiritual consciousness is to understand who we are. We still do stuff. We live in the world. We have duties, and we carry out our duties in the world. We have our affection for family and friends and all those things. And at the same time, we start to awaken to who we are. And the most effective spiritualizing force is the sound of the holy name. It's in scripture. And it's just a fact. Like how we began. You were busy with doing some service in the kitchen, I guess, but the names, Jai Radha Madhava, that song, just names. But there's a potency in those names. And the singing makes it easy. It's easier than sitting with your hand on some beads, and the mind just wants to go somewhere. So the musical part makes it in some ways easier. But still the mind likes to wander, even with that. But it's a principle that by practice and practice and practice and practice, it becomes second nature. I imagine when you were learning to cook, it was a little klutzy. But, you know, now it's just like 1, 2, 3. Or, you know, riding a bicycle. Takes a while to, and then it becomes like 1, 2, 3. So it becomes very, very natural. It's actually natural for the soul to be aware of who we are. This other is a diseased condition. It's quite abnormal. I mean, from a spiritual perspective. But most people in this world don't know who they are. They think they know who they are. I'm Mr. So-and-so or Mrs. So-and-so. That's who I am. And I'm da-da-da-da-da. I'm this tall, these color eyes, and this is my birth, and this is my address, and this is my cell phone number. That's who I am. See, here's my picture. That's not who we are. Most people don't know who they are. So self-realization is to awaken to who we really are, and the spiritualizing effect is most effective through chanting. So be patient with yourself. We all know what that experience is of distracted chanting. Stay with it. Just practice with faith that there's potency in these names that awakens consciousness, purifies the mind. Cheto Dharpa Namarjanam, it cleanses the mirror of the mind. Even when you're distracted, the cleansing is going on. Yeah.
About the Ram and Krishna, like the Dashrath, then four brothers of Ram, are they also come with the, as Gita says, yada yada hi dharmasya, like whenever God has to come in on the earth, is he come with his, devotees? I mean, like, he always come with the Balram, right? I mean, I'm not sure, but Ram, Lakshmana, Ram and Lakshmana in the next,
Balaram and Krishna.
Yes, yes, exactly.
That's correct. So
yes.
You're just asking for verification, is that correct?
No, I mean, I'm also asking about the, like, Dashrath, and the two other brothers, are they also coming with
No. Dasarath is eternally Dasarath, and Kaushalya is eternally Kaushalya. And Krishna's parents, Nanda and Yashoda, they're eternally Krishna's parents, Nanda and Yashoda, or Vasudeva and Devaki. There's not an overlap.
So it's just a Balaram and...
Yeah, let's put it this way. There's categories. Well, the Sanskrit word is tattva, Vishnu tattva. And then there's a living entity, jiva tattva. And then there's another category, Shiva tattva. So Nanda and Jasoda and their expansions of Krishna's Shakti. He has a spiritual form, and his spiritual form has Shaktis, and he expands his Shaktis as Nanda and Jasoda. And he's enjoying relationships with them. It's his Shakti. And they have parental affection for him. And he has affection for them like a child or the son. Now here's Ram and Lakshman. They're Vishnu Tattva, Vishnu category. And Ram expands his Shaktis as Dasarath and Kaushalya. He has this Leela where he appears as their son. But in the spiritual realm, there's Ram and his brothers. There's expansions of him. And he has his mother and father who are expansions of him. His Shakti, his own spiritual form. His form is all spiritual in Ayodhya. So, back to your question. Lakshman is Ram's expansion. Lakshman, Bharata, and Shatrughna, they're his expansions. They're comparable in Krishna's pastimes. Krishna and Balaram and Pradyumna and Aniruddha. That's Shatrughna and Bharata. But that's Vishnu, not Jiva. Or Shakti. It's Vishnu. So, what I'm trying to say, I don't know how to say it succinctly. It's a different set of rules or different procedure of the unfolding, the expansions of Krishna. And they have their counterpart. Balaram has his counterpart in Ram's Leela, that's Lakshman. Krishna has his counterpart in Ram's Leela, that's Ram. In one sense, they're the same. Ram and Krishna, the same. There's a difference in terms of Leela and in terms of sweetness, like we've been discussing. Krishna has a flute and Ram has bows and arrows. So they have different paraphernalia for their pastimes. That's, you know, on the Vishnu Tattva level. Then there's expansions of them in terms of their potencies. So they're not the same. Ram has his paraphernalia, his bow and arrow. Krishna has his flute, buffalo horn and other things, rope for tying the cows, for milking, and he has his paraphernalia. Balaram has his plow. And then they have their mother and father, and they're not the same. Mother and father are not the same. The paraphernalia is not the same. In principle, it's the same principle, but it's not the same. Like Lakshman and Balaram, Krishna and Ram. That's the Vishnu Tattva category. And then there's the paraphernalia category and the expansions of rasa personalities. Okay? Does that take care of it?
Yeah.
You have something more?
Is it also possible in Kali Yuga to...
Garuda?
Kali Yuga.
What about Kali Yuga now?
Is it possible to... We know that Vishnu has 10 avatars and Kalki avatar is still going to come in end of the Kali Yuga.
Yeah.
So is it also going to, possible to come Balaram too?
Or
is
yes, just, he does.
He does?
Yes. You want to know his name? No? Yes? Nityananda. Nityananda Ram. Krishna comes in the form of his own devotee, Chaitanya. Balaram comes in the form of the brother, Nityananda Ram.
This form is not mentioned in the 10 form of Krishna, like Vishnu Bhagwan, like Mahesha Avatar.
Those are called Leela avatars. There's six categories of avatars. One of those six categories is Leela avatar. They perform pastimes, Leela. Matsya, Korma, Nishinga, Vamana, Kalki, Parashuram, Krishna Balaram. Those are Leela avatars. Celebrated. Das avatar, celebrated. Jayadev Goswami wrote a song, the Das Avatar Stotra. So they're celebrated. But there's many other Leela avatars, but then there's five other categories. And one of those categories is Yuga Avatar. Yuga Avatar. Lord Chaitanya comes as Yuga Avatar. He delivers the Yuga Dharma. And he comes towards the beginning of Kali Yuga. And that's Krishna, and the Balaram feature is Nityananda Ram. And they're brothers, and they're always together. Just like Krishna and Balaram, they're always together. There's some differences, of course, but it's the same bhav, the same mood of love, inseparable. There's details. Okay? Nice question. You have something.
Hare Krishna Prabhu Maharaj. So, all avatars has same Vishnu Tattva?
No. Mostly, but not all. So one of the six categories, there's six, five plus one, six. This one is called Shakti Avesha Avatar. So we'll just deal with this one. Shakti Avesha Avatar is a living entity, commonly it's a jiva, but not always, that it is carrying the fullness of the potency of the Supreme Lord in a particular category. Like, for example, Prithu Maharaj is the bearer of the Lord's ruling potency, Pavana Shakti. Another category. The four Kumaras are bearers of the Lord's Gyan Shakti. Shakti Vesh Avatar. Brahma is the bearer of the Lord's creative potency, Srishti Shakti. The Lord invests these living entities with the fullness of his potency in a certain category for a function. However, in the Shaktivesha avatar, there some, Anantashesha is an example, where Vishnu Tattva, but they're in the category of Shaktivesh. They're exhibiting specifically and nearly exclusively a certain potency of the Lord for a function in the universe. Ananta, holding up with his hoods the planets and so on. Describing the Lord's glories with his so many mouths. Ananta. Otherwise, they're in the Vishnu Tattva category. The other five, they're Vishnu Tattva. There's Guna avatars. Brahma is a jiva, and Lord Shiva is not jiva, not Vishnu. And then there's Vishnu, so that's the Guna avatars. Then there's Manvantar avatars, and they're living entities that are empowered to do a certain function. Manvantar avatars. The Leela avatars. But some of the Leela avatars, like Buddha, is not Vishnu Tattva. Now, there's different Buddha. Actually, I shouldn't say that. There's different Buddhas, and sometimes they're Vishnu, and sometimes they're not. So I have to be careful. Generally, there's not a lot of, I've researched it, there's not a lot of explanation of Buddha's position, although he's very important in our modern era. There's not a lot of understanding about Buddha's, you know, origin and his destination, and the followers of Buddha and what their destination is. There's not a lot. Prabhupada's Sannyas Guru wrote about Buddha in a very authoritative text. Anyway, so we don't get lost in just Buddha. So the short answer is no. They're not all Vishnu Tattva. Largely they are, but not all. Okay, so online?
So this question is from Megha Mataji from Naperville. Krishna can come in any form at any time. He can send someone as an instrument to advise us. But how can we tell a difference between when the advice comes, how can we tell that it is not the person's own justification or excuse and it is Krishna's message?
Well, the first part is we have our checks and balance system. Someone is presenting teachings, and we check it against what scripture and the primary sadhus throughout the course of history, what they say. So Guru Sadhu Shastra. Someone's taking the function of guru. How do we know if it's consistent with scripture? You have to study scripture. So that's how we can verify. And if it doesn't conform with scripture, then we don't accept it. Now, there's another question. Is it coming by their mercy? Is that part of the question?
Basically, how to differentiate if it is the person's own
message
or Krishna's message?
Guru Sadhu Shastra. That's how we know. Okay.
And this is from Sachisuta Prabhu. I heard you said unlimited Vaikuntha planets. So Lord Narayana reside in each Vaikuntha planet?
Yes.
Like Lord Balaji in one planet and other expansion of Narayana form in other planets?
Well, I don't know about Balaji in Vaikuntha. I can't comment about that.
So this is from Radha Kunja Bihari Prabhu. Today morning, I was reading a conversation that Srila Prabhupada was having in which he was saying, after 10,000 years, there will be no Hare Krishna Mahamantra. It'll be a period where men eat men. In today's class, you were recounting that Krishna was killing demons 3 times in a day, every day. How do we understand that living entities will not have Krishna's mercy 10,000 years from now, as Srila Prabhupada was stating?
Well, it's not that they won't have Krishna's mercy. That's not what Prabhupada said. But the efficacy of the Maha Mantra will be not the same after 10,000 years. So let's go back, and even in Satyayuga, Dhruva Maharaj was chanting the names of Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. That's to say, in all the 4 yugas, the name has potency. In this Kali Yuga, for the next 10,000 years, there's special effect for those who chant. But it's not like after that, the bell rings and it's zero. Or there's no protection, there's no access, there's nothing. It's all dark. That's not what Prabhupada said, and it's not what happens. The special effect is now. Take advantage. Don't be around after 10,000 years. Okay?
So this is from Shravan Prabhu. Krishna moves from Vrindavan to Dwaraka around the age of 16, he says, and spends the rest of the time in Dwaraka until 125 years of age. We don't hear about the inhabitants of Vrindavan growing old after Krishna's childhood pastimes.
We don't hear too much about them at all, other than, you know, the feelings of separation, but not activities and so forth. We don't hear.
This is from Mahati Mataji. We learn that Krishna is our father and he is everything to us. But we also learn that we have to be in the mood of servant of Krishna as Dasa Dasa Anudasa. How to treat Krishna as father at the same time think that I'm a servant?
I don't see a conflict. Is there a conflict? So there's no conflict. We're visiting someone's home here, and the housewife, her mother and father are right behind her. And she sees them as mother and father, and she serves them. It's not a conflict. There's mom and dad, and she serves them. No conflict. No contradiction.
This is from Radha Vallabha Prabhu. In Krishna's pastimes, the demoniac personality caused fear on daily basis to cowherd boys. So, when pure devotees face challenging situations and they reach out to Krishna's protection, and they have challenging past impressions, do they have challenging past impressions in their consciousness, or their love and shelter in Krishna clears any fearful impressions?
Well, it depends on, the answer to the two things. The answer depends on the degree of transparency of consciousness. So there could be residual traces of memory of something or not, depending on transparency of consciousness. And then the second is, Krishna may bring to one's mind anything he wants to bring to one's mind in order to help one take deeper shelter of him. And that's completely in Krishna's hand, even for those who are 100% pure devotees.
This is from Amara Mataji.
I'm thinking of Dasarath, and when the calamity came that he had to uphold his word to Kaikeyi, and then then it came to mind why he has to undergo this difficulty when he was young, what he did, and so forth. So
this is from Amara Mataji. Is there any account of what was the great fortune of Bakasura or other demons being touched by the lotus feet of Krishna? Any piety or sadhana?
No indication. Krishna's mercy, that's all.
And this question is from Bhakti Priya Mataji. When Krishna comes to earth, he comes with all his entourage, associates, etc. So, when Krishna was leaving the earth planet, did he take Vrajavasis with him to the spiritual world?
He went to Dwaraka, three things. Actually, four things. There's the manifest pastimes in Vrindavan became unmanifest. So that is to say, the aprakat forms of Krishna's associates enter their aprakat stage. The prakat forms, number two, is described in Padma Purana that Krishna arranged for them to return to the spiritual world. A Vaikuntha Vimana descended and took them. And they returned to Krishna Loka. That's two things. A third thing is there were partial expansions of demigods under the request of Vishnu for this, and Brahma instructed the demigods, appear on earth ahead of me so that you can assist me in partaking my pastime. So partial expansions of them were sent back to their heavenly realm. And the fourth was, so Krishna entered into aprakat lila. Krishna went with the associates to the Krishna Loka, and another expansion of Krishna went back to Dwaraka to settle things in Dwaraka. So that was your question. There's the answer. Okay. Anything else? How about you two in the back, Mom and Dad? You're good. Okay. Thank you very much, Prabhupada Ki. Jai.